This is Inman's Real Estate Radio, where we go behind the scenes with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Here's your host, Bernice Ross.
Welcome. I'm Bernice Ross, the CEO of RealEstateCoach.com, and I'm very happy to welcome Tyler McKenzie. Tyler is the franchise owner and designated broker of John L. Scott, West Seattle. He is the 2016 Realtor of the Year for the Seattle King County of Realtors, and he's also a top-producing agent. Tyler, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Bernice. It's always a pleasure.
Well, first of all, you opened a new franchise in 2016. You were serving as immediate past president of the Seattle King County Realtors. You served as vice president-elect of membership at the Washington Association, and you were one of 18 agents nationwide that participated in NAR's Leadership Academy, and you still were top producer. How do you manage that all?
You know, it's funny, Bernice. I'm asked that question a lot, and I would love to say that there's a magical answer to it, but frankly, I think what it just boils down to is being organized and focused.
So how do you carve out a typical day in your life with all these different things going on simultaneously here? How are you balancing
That's a great question. And I would say that it all starts with having a calendar. I don't keep a paper calendar. My smartphone is an Android-based device, so I do everything for and on my business, either in the Gmail sphere or in Google Docs or Google Drive. So I have access to all of my files and all of my information, regardless of where I am or what computer is in front of me. So that creates some really great efficiencies. When I'm working on contracts, I typically do everything as much as possible by electronic signature. Having said that, I will always make sure that I'm meeting with my clients face-to-face before I do any electronic signature work, because it's very important that I understand that they know precisely what they're signing. So I just keep very diligent records and a very diligent calendar. I review it typically at the beginning of every day or the end of the preceding evening to make sure that I understand what all the following day's commitments look like. I make sure that I carve out personal time in that calendar as well so that I'm taking care of my own needs.
Tyler, so if you're busy doing something for the state association, your local association, or NAR, how do you handle your clients when there's a conflict?
When I meet with a client for the first time, again, I review my calendar, and I look at my calendar not just in terms of what's happening in the immediate future, but also what's happening during that period that I project I will be working with this client. So let's say, for instance, that I have a meeting with Washington Realtors coming up in January, and I'm taking on a new listing on January 1st. Then that's a conversation that I will be having with my clients, setting the expectation that although I might not be physically in the same city on a given day, I have the tools available to me to address whatever questions or challenges may arise during my absence. And more importantly, I always make sure that I have team members in place to provide backup in the unlikely event that I actually need it. So, and by team members, I do not mean that I run a team. I don't. But after 16 years of doing this, I have learned to identify people who I trust and in whom I will place the trust of my business in the event that I'm not available to work on a particular problem in any given moment. So, for instance, when I acquired the company, I identified somebody on our team who I felt would be well suited to the personality of my clients. And when I needed to turn to that person to open a door for a showing or to do something that required a live body be on site, then I knew that I had that person available, and I'd already prepped my clients so that they were confident and comfortable that whether or not it was me, that their needs were going to be taken care of.
So you introduced them more or less as a member of your team, or you're part of your backup team in the sense of that person
Correct.
Would be available. How do you go about compensating someone like this? Is it hourly rate? Do you give them a piece of the commission? How do you make the determination?
It really is sort of a range of those things. In some instances, if I simply need for somebody to open a door or to sit an inspection, then I'll pay a mutually agreed to hourly rate for that service. If I'm relying upon somebody to provide a higher level of real estate advocacy, which might come in the form of writing an offer or doing something that I would typically be doing, then obviously that's a different conversation and we come to a mutually agreeable solution. I will say this, however, whenever I'm meeting with my clients, I assure them that first and foremost, I am always on point for anything that is contract or negotiation based. So even if I am on the other side of the world, if they're writing an offer, I'm the person who's going to be walking them through that process because that's the guarantee of service that I have made to my clients.
So what you do during your listing appointment then is you set up the expectation that you may not always be available, but physically available to be on site, but you are available for those parts of the transaction that require your attention, offer negotiation, writing offers, handling problems, so forth and so on.
Absolutely. And if for whatever, you captured that perfectly. That is precisely how I couch it. In the unlikely event that I'm out of town during an inspection or some other activity that requires that an agent be on site, then I will either be coaching the agent who is on site and my clients or coaching my clients. Regardless, I'll be setting up the expectation that at the end of the day, I am the person who is going to be doing the hand-holding and the counseling on that transaction.
Do you ever have sellers who push back on that?
No.
I think what you've just done, though, Tyler, is you've given us a really important point. When you explain your availability and your clients understand that you are going to be available to them when they negotiate the offer, when something critical is going on in the transaction, then that they understand. I mean, and a
That's
lot of
exactly
agents, I believe, they're afraid to do that, but you're living proof that it's not an issue.
No, it's you know, I have spent my entire career finding those ways to build a reputation and build a resume, if you will, that lends itself to supporting those assurances that I can give to my clients. I mean, one of the reasons that I am this new owner and one of the reasons that I'm engaged in my association is so that my clients see that I am operating at a higher level than my competition. As somebody mentioned to me recently when I was volunteering for an activity, and she also is a top producer in our part of the world, she said, always give it to somebody who's busy.
One of the things that is really important when an agent goes on a listing presentation is their unique selling proposition. So you actually differentiate yourself from teams in the sense that you are there throughout the entire transaction. Have any of your clients talked to someone who has a team and they opt to go with you? Have you gotten any feedback on that in the past?
I don't think I've had any knowledge of competing with somebody who was on a team and whether or not I lost a piece of business to that. What I will say is this. I think oftentimes people build teams potentially for the wrong reason. You know, teams sometimes can be rooted in a sense of ego. And, you know, the bigger my team, the busier I am, the more money I'm making, the more signs I have in front yards. And what we all know is that if you really delve into the math, a person who's making $1 million running a 12-person team might actually only be bringing, you know, a low six-figure salary home because they're spending all of their money on marketing and they're spending all of their money on feeding other mouths. And that's just not the commitment that I've made to my own business. What I've decided to do is to build a robust database of people who know me, like me, and trust me, who want to work with me. And based on the premise that I will take on enough business that I can assure, for which I can assure the best quality. And where I can increase that level of business is by tapping people around me to whom I can delegate certain activities, which goes back to what I was talking about before. If I need somebody to open a door, then I can have somebody open a door. If I need somebody to sit an inspection or do something that requires a deeper level of detail, then I can delegate that task, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I need to build a team because it's a short-term solution to a problem. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if people build teams really to promote, what's the best way of putting this, to promote the sense of their own success rather than building a team to provide the client with the highest level of service possible. And I personally prescribe to the latter, which is that I want my clients to have the best possible service, and I don't necessarily think I need an army to provide that.
I think that's a great observation because many of our listeners, of course, are solo practitioners, and again, it comes back to the quality. Let's do a little bit of a deeper dive into what are you doing to generate your leads?
My business is largely by referral. It has been that way for the bulk of my career. I've been doing this now for 16 years. I made a commitment early on in the building of my business that I would focus on my immediate sphere and I would build from there. So if you want to liken me to the tortoise and the hare, I'm definitely more of the tortoise in my business model. There were some people who came out of the gates just sprinting off for the finish line, and I've just been very, very methodical in building a database person by person by person while also understanding the metrics that are necessary to know when your database is going to fall off or when you need to replace it with new people.
Can you share some of the metrics or how you're making that decision about when you need to be building?
Some of your listeners will be familiar with Ninja Sales, Larry Kendall's program. I've been a great advocate of that program. It's worked really well for my business. I believe in maintaining a sphere-oriented business, but we all know statistically that if, let's say you have 100 people in your sphere, odds are that 15% of those names are going to drop off of your database in any given year. So if 15 names are going to drop off of my database, then I know that I need to find 15 names to replace them. If I want to build my business by 20%, then the math is simple. For 100 people in my database, if I want to build it by 20% rather, then I need 120 people. If I know that 15 people are going to drop off the database, then in essence, to hit that 20% increase, I need to add 35 people to my database. Those metrics are very, very simple metrics, but they work. And so if you want to make $1 million a year, technically speaking, you probably want to have about 1,000 people in your database because each person may be worth about $1,000 in business in any given year, and about 15% of your clients are likely to transact some form of real estate in any given 12-month period. And you just build your metrics off of these basic principles.
Let's assume that you have 200 people in your database. What mm-hmm. are you doing to stay in contact with them and keep top of mind?
I try to touch them as frequently as I possibly can. So it's a multi-pronged process. When I get a new client, the first thing that I do is I have them fill out a questionnaire. And the purpose of the questionnaire is twofold. It helps me understand what their concerns, wants, goals, needs, etc. are in their real estate transactional process. But it also helps me capture personal information from the client. I capture anniversary dates, birthday card dates, I learn about their favorite restaurants, I captured some personal information that helps me flesh out my database and fill out my calendar so that when that birthday comes around, I can pick up the phone and I can call the party and wish them a happy birthday. I can send them a gift card to their favorite restaurant because I know that there's some special event going on. I can do these things that are very personalized to the particular client. And that's how I flesh out my database. And, of course, I also plug them into my monthly mailer, which I do by MailChimp is actually the vendor that I use, so I do it electronically. And every once in a while, I may come up with an event that is warranting of a paper mailer. For instance, we just did the grand opening at our office here, and so I did a personalized note to everybody in my database, inviting them to come to the grand opening. Now, of course, not all people are going to show up, but it's the gesture that is the thing that carries the weight. And so I find, you know, I also maintain a business Facebook page, and I have other outlets that I use to ensure that I'm touching as many of my clients in some marketing fashion as frequently as I possibly can in the month. So I'm looking for anywhere from 1 to 3 touches in a month. And if I, you know, and I would say on average, I'm probably connecting with clients I would say anywhere from 1 to 2 times a month, either in some personal fashion or by one of these either social media or electronic mailing methods that I just mentioned. But the bottom line is that the best way to stay front of mind is to be in constant contact with your database, because we all know that the average individual in our country probably knows 10 agents, and it is of no use to anybody being number two on that list when it comes time to transact a piece of real estate. So I want to be number one. I do those things necessary to make sure I stay front of mind. I am one of the top producers in my company, but I have somebody in this office who is our top producer, and she is a practitioner of Brian Buffini's coaching systems and follows them to a T. And she is literally doing the handshake and the face-to-face or the mailer or whatever the proper touch is with absolute consistency, and it's reflected in the numbers that she puts in front of me every year. I mean, she's a phenomenal producer, and that's really what it takes. For those of your listeners who want to be that seven-figure real estate producer, you have to follow these systems to an absolute T. And then it's just about trusting the systems and trusting the math, because the math doesn't lie.
So, Tyler, I was talking to one of the owners of one of the big companies mm-hmm. in the U.S., and he said that agents who work exclusively by referral, you know, and when there's a downturn, their business may drop by up to 80%. People who only work by prospecting cold business, they will see a downturn in their business and they have to work twice as hard in a downturn. The people who do the best are the people who do both. Would you agree or disagree with that?
No, you're managing your sphere. And as long as you are managing your sphere, then you are staying in front of your database. And you are generating leads. In my own personal experience during the downturn, one of the ways that I was able to ensure that my business remained robust was by showing up at work, was by doing those things necessary to stay in front of my database. Now, did it get easier or harder? It got harder. But by understanding the number of touches it took me to stay in front of my clients, or by understanding the number of hours in a day that it took me to yield the same business opportunity that might have, you know, come more easily a year earlier, by understanding that math, I was able to adjust to it. And I would not differentiate between the types of spheres necessarily as being better or worse. It is the practice of staying in contact using whatever system it is that you're using. If a broker wants to spend, you know, $10,000 a month on internet-based advertising and not do any sphere-based work, not do any, you know, referral-based work, that's fine. That is a system that may work for that party. And then conversely, if somebody wants to focus only on friends and family and their broader sphere, but they do it consistently, that's also fine, because both of those resources are going to yield positive results as long as it's the work that's going into working on those resources, as long as that work remains consistent.
So, Tyler, what you're actually saying is you're doing what this person said, because you're staying in front of you. You're prospecting your database, and I think that's the distinction. You are constantly prospecting your database, and that's what yields the business.
Absolutely. And the minute that I stop prospecting my database is the minute that my database will stop serving my business. The fundamental thing for agents to know about our business is that it's transactionally based. It doesn't matter that we're in the business of real estate. What matters is that we are closing transactions, because that's how we get paid. And the only way to understand how you are going to get paid is by understanding how your database, whether it's a database that's cold call or a database that's built through Sphere, is serving you. And if you don't understand the attrition that happens on an annual basis, and you're not doing the things that are necessary to track that change to your database, then you won't be able to leverage it to the best of your ability. And that can also be said for being somebody who uses an aggregator like one of I'm not going to name businesses, but let's just pick a big aggregator out there. If I'm spending $3,000 a month on an aggregator and I'm getting, $10,000 worth of business off of that aggregator on a monthly basis, then my net is $7,000 and I can do the math. And if that works for my business, that's great. And if I feel that I need to increase that model by investing more into it to get a higher return and I'm getting the yield, then that also is great. But the bottom line is that whatever system it is that an agent is using, it has to be system-based. And you have to understand the system.
Tyler, I want to shift gears here a little bit because I believe, like you do, that a lot of agents leave tremendous amounts of money on the table because they really don't handle referrals well. What is your strategy for handling a referral in your own area versus handling something that's out of state? And then, of course, the stickiest question is, how do you decide what the referral fee should be?
Let's start with the premise of what your service area is. So I made a decision early in my business that I was going to serve a geographical area, and I do not go outside certain boundaries. On the rare occasion that I do, it's after I've had a conversation with my client where I discuss the downside of my not necessarily having neighborhood familiarity and how that relates to all of the positives that I bring to the transaction that they might rather have. So I make sure that I have that conversation and that it's ethical and that it's fully disclosing so that they're making the right decision about whether or not they want to work with me versus have me refer them to somebody. Now, having said that, if somebody calls me and let's say they want to have they want to list their house in Portland, Oregon, and I'm in Seattle, Washington, well, clearly I'm neither licensed nor am I inclined to hop in my car and go take a listing in Portland. Just as with my clients, I would say that my professional relationships are all sphere-based as well. And in having worked with volunteer leaders at the local, state, and national level, I've really been able to build a large network of people across the country who I trust. And those are the first people who I call. Let's say you have a listing in Austin, Texas, and I have worked with somebody out of the Texas Association of Realtors leadership body, then I know who to call and at least get a name, if not that person, directly. And then once I've established the contact with whomever it is to whom I'm referring the business, then it's a question of how warm or cold the lead was. Is this somebody who's a close family friend? Is it somebody who I've been working with for a very long time, whose interests I'm particularly invested in protecting because they've been a wonderful referring, source for me? Then I might ask for a little more. If it's a cold lead, friend of a client who picks up the phone and says, yes, I'm moving to Texas. Do you know anybody? And all the work that I did was pick up the phone and find a referring partner, then I'm probably likely to ask for less. Sometimes it's also cost-based. And I know that I've surprised a few agents in the past. I've referred off business that was, for lower-end purchases. And I've just said, hey, take great care of this person. You get the entire referral. It's on you. I just want to make sure that this client is taken care of. Because at the end of the day, I want to make sure that the client's getting the best possible service. And sometimes if by asking for a referral fee, you are impacting the agent's ability to really provide the services and make a living, then, maybe it doesn't make sense to ask for that referral fee. So there are a lot of moving pieces, but at the end of the day, it's going to be about relationship. It's going to be about the warmness of the lead and whether or not I think the party on the other end of the line is going to be well-suited to taking care of my client's needs.
What's your best recommendation for our listeners for 2017?
Well, I happen to be in a market that is likely to once again be super hot. I suspect that across the United States, we're going to see a lot of very active sales activity in the coming year. And I would just say, strap up your boots and get ready for the ride. We're in an interesting market where in Seattle, for instance, we've got the lowest inventory still in our lifetimes. And it can make doing what we do very difficult because we have a lot of multiple offer situations where you might have 15 people writing offers, which means 14 aren't getting paid. So contrary to popular belief that, you know, our market is just super heated and everybody's making a boatload of money, fact of the matter is that people are working really hard. I think my best advice to your listeners is, you know, stay organized, stay committed, stay healthy, and just make sure you have the systems in place to have the best possible and most successful year you can.
Thank you, Tyler. This has been a great discussion. We've been visiting with Tyler McKenzie. He's a franchise owner and designated broker of John L. Scott in West Seattle. He's 2016 Realtor of the Year for Seattle King County. And he's just shared what really works in terms of his business to stay on top. Tyler, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Bernice. It's always such a pleasure to be a guest in your show, and I look forward to coming back.
Thank you, Tyler.
This is Bernice Ross, and thank you for joining us for MN Real Estate Radio. Be sure to tune in next Thursday when we'll be back with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit MN.com. Make it a great day.